The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to BS Report, taping this on a Friday from Indianapolis. It's Super Bowl week. Honored to have my favorite basketball player of all time, Mr. Larry Bird. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I grew up in the Boston Garden.
So you were, I did too.
I know. So I think I wrote once that out of the 25 greatest moments of my life, I think you're involved in like seven of them. Seven or eight, I'm not sure. I think that Bird Steals the Ball might be in the top five.
You need to get a better life.
I wanted to ask you about, let's start with Super Bowl week. Everyone's talking about Peyton Manning, where's he going, all this stuff. You know, back in the day, there was, I think, like 89 or 90. You were upset with your contract. There was a chance you might not stay with the Celtics. Everybody in Boston was going freaking out that you might leave. When you look at Manning might actually leave the Colts, I mean, how important was it to you that you stayed in Boston your whole career?
Very important. And I don't remember what year that was, but Red knew I wasn't going anywhere.
Right. But you had to do the whole dance.
But no, well, it really wasn't that. It was just that they wanted to do something in the summer, and they they didn't get it done, and Red was out of it. I was dealing with somebody else. And what they were telling me is just wasn't the truth.
Yeah.
And it sort of upset me, but I wasn't going anywhere. I would never left Boston unless they traded me. I like to see guys come in, especially the elite players, and stay in one place. I think it's very important for the city because we don't have a lot of great ones come through here. And Peyton Manning, by far, is the greatest athlete ever come through this city. And if he's healthy, you know, he stays and finishes out his career. But I don't know his medical, but he's been fantastic. I mean, he'll go down in history as one of the greatest quarterbacks, and he's been great in the community. He's got his name on a hospital, and it's just fantastic. And I hope he's able to stay healthy and finish his career here.
Well, like, I'm looking at it from my vantage point. Like, all right, so I'm in Boston in the early 90s. You're battling your back issues. Let's say the Celtics ended up with the number one pick that year, and it's Derek Coleman. And everybody's like, we should pick Coleman, and then we'll trade Bird. Like, the Celtic fans never would have wanted that, I feel like. And do you feel like the Colts fans actually want Manning to get traded? Like, or... It seems like they want him to stay, right?
Well, you know, after last year, everything sort of blew up.
Yeah.
I'd say really if it came down to it, probably 80% would like to see him come back.
Yeah.
And there's always a few that like to see it move on and start all over. But they get spoiled. Fans get spoiled. And if things don't go well next year, if he's not here, then they turn and start wanting Peyton back. But it's too late. But if you have an elite athlete come through, and especially in a small market, you got to hold on to them players. They're not born every day.
Yeah.
You know? So it's hit and miss.
We in Boston, there was a big thing about Danny Ainge was talking about. Yeah, I might have to make a trade here. I might have to get rid of Garnett, Pierce, Ray Allen, all three of them. And he mentioned how in the late '80s with the Celtics, that Red had told him he had a top possible trade for you and a possible trade for McHale, and they ultimately decided to keep all you guys and kind of ride it out, and Ainge thinks that was a mistake. If you were somehow the Celtics GM in the late 80s, what would you have done?
I would have kept him.
We kept him.
Well, the one thing about Red was loyalty, and that's why I never wanted to leave there, because I always knew he had my back.
Yeah.
He cared for me. He wanted me to do well. Obviously, he wanted me to play at a high level. I was with Danny and Red and McHale the day we were talking about that. The one thing that Danny threw in there was players' names. And the whole time I was in Boston, I never heard Red mention any other players on other teams.
Right.
I heard him talking about, you know, draft picks. But I never heard him about, well, Larry, I can trade you for this, this, and this. He just never done that.
But I don't think you were around the table, though.
No, but Danny did tell Red he should trade us right now because we don't have much left in the tank.
Well, the one trade that actually kind of made sense, but I'm glad the Celtics didn't do it, was I know Dallas offered Perkins and Shrimp for McHale because they were making a run. It was the year you were hurt in 88-89. You played like only six games. Right. You were recovering. And I think Dallas did make that offer. And it's a pretty interesting trade. Like, you think, like, the careers that Perkins and Shrimp had, they would have been the Celtics for, you know, the next decade.
Well, I coached Sam, so I know how good he was. Right, even at the end of his career, he was a gamer. But you know what? If you really look at it, Red coached many great players. He had great teams. And there's just too much loyalty there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way he did things, he felt he could rebuild it back in a short period of time. But Kevin McHale's don't come around very often.
True.
And Robert Parrish. But, you know, if you want to hold on for 15 years and play 2 minutes a game is one thing. But, you know, in 1987, Kevin played through a broken foot.
Right.
And it's actually broken. And he tried to play, and he's still paying for it. So we don't find them type of guys anymore. Very few of them out there, probably. But Kevin gave his heart and soul to the Celtics, and Red knew that.
Red. And, you know, a lot of people don't remember that about the McHale broken foot. What's interesting to me is he would do it again because his attitude was, we were so close that year, and it really came down to one or two plays, and I never would have been able to live with myself knowing that I wasn't out there, and yet he was never the same.
Well, I can
after
remember
that
in the finals, and I seen the x-rays. There was a crack in there.
Yeah.
And as the season was over, it just grew. It got bigger. And
Mahorn was stepping on it.
Sure. But Kevin was right. If you get a chance that for that last goal and that last couple games you need, you've got to play if you can.
Right.
Because you might not never get there again.
That was, I think, the one of the lost titles from that era.
Right.
I think 82, I still feel like, which is a team that never gets mentioned, but Tiny separated his shoulder in the Sixers series. But that was actually the best Celtics team of your early part of your career, I felt like. That was they won 18 straight.
Yeah, we had 2 7 game series. I was down 3-1 against Philly and came back both times.
Yeah.
And the last time they beat us in the seventh game in Boston. So
I was there.
we always had good teams.
Yeah.
And it always seems like injuries got in our way, which it does for a lot of teams. But in 87, Irvin always tells me that's their best team. Well, we had a lot of injuries that year. I would like to play them heads up with Walton and the team we had in 86, because 86 was definitely our best team.
You know what? I had dinner with him this summer, and he refuses to acknowledge all the injuries from that 87 team, because he says how, oh, yeah, our 87 team was better than your 86 team. And I was like, but you guys didn't show up for the 86 finals. We were waiting for you. And you guys decided to just bow out against Houston. He's like, that's not true. But I still think that 86 team was the best of all those mid-80s teams. He disagrees.
There's no question.
Yeah.
I mean, with Bill Walton coming in as your backup, Scotty Wedman, I mean, Jerry Sitchin, I mean, we were loaded.
Yeah.
And if you remember, Jerry shot like 55% from the field that year. I mean, he had open shots.
Yeah.
Exactly what we needed off the bench. Then Scotty played behind me, and Bill played behind me. I mean, it was just a stacked team.
And the other thing with that team, Wedman missed most of the playoffs, which, you know, when people talk about who was the greatest team ever, and say, well, they lost 2 games in the finals to the Rockets. Well, first of all, shouldn't have lost game 3. That was the one, lose by 2 in Houston. But it was like just, it was kind of a giveaway. That's I feel like that was a giveaway game.
Yeah. Well, that was the inadvertent whistle, wasn't it?
Yes. You remember that one. Is it true that you can see if we had a game on right now from like some game in the 80s, a playoff game, you would know what play it was?
I'm not as good. I don't watch it that much, but I know 10 years ago, you could start watching, I could tell you what was going to happen. But that's
but
sort
play
of
by play by play, what was going to happen?
I might miss one or two here and there, but I can catch up with it. But I haven't done it for so long, I don't know. I don't know. I was with somebody the other day, and they had a game on, and I was looking, and I said, I barely remember that one.
Oh, really?
Against the Pistons, because usually the Pistons I put over here and never pay no attention to them.
Right. Anyway. The 87, that was when Parrish had a sprained ankle. I think Danny had a sprained ankle.
I was the healthiest one on the team.
You were the only healthy one.
So
you were playing like 43 minutes a game, though.
Well, that's all right.
And then Walt was out.
I get paid for 48.
True. No Lambias that year either, which nobody ever factors in when they talk about that era.
Yeah.
If Lambias sticks around, how much longer do you play and how much healthier are you?
I would have left in 88.
What do you mean?
I would have retired in 88.
That would have been it?
Yeah.
How come?
because I started having the ankle problems, and they were going to have to detach my Achilles to get these spurs out. I knew I was going to miss the whole year. If he was there, I would have just shut it down right there.
Really?
Yeah.
How old would you have been, like 32?
Yeah, 32, I think.
You walked away from all that cash?
I walked away from it anyway.
That's true. Well, see, I would have felt like, I thought 87 put the biggest toll on your body.
You know, the one thing that people don't understand is, if you look at our teams, 4 years in a row, we went to the finals.
Yep.
And playoff basketball is completely different. I played 2 years of playoff basketball. But our bodies don't have time to recover. When we had injuries. So when you go 2.5 months and you start again, you feel better, but you're not recovered health-wise. And that just kept adding on. Kobe is one of the toughest human beings I've ever seen because I know what he's been through, and he's played a hell of a lot more minutes than me.
Yeah.
And he just finally figured out, hey, I'm going to get hurt. I'm just going to have to play through it. And that's the mentality of a great player.
Right. And your era was a little different because the travel was a little different. You didn't have these charters. Did you have a charter in the mid-'80s? No.
No, we had it the last 2 years I was there. Started in 90.
And you had, like in the Pistons series in 87, we're up 2-0. I say we like I was on the team. We're up 2-0.
Everybody in Boston was on
that
team.
Yeah, we were. Plus, we hated that Pistons team. Goes to Detroit Saturday, Sunday, back-to-back. And then you get in the fight with Lambeer in game four. All of a sudden it's 2-2 in like 24 hours, but they don't do those back-to-back playoff games anymore, things like that.
No, we probably played at night and in the afternoon the next day.
Yeah.
I think it was a low-scoring game, the second game, like 80-78 or something.
Yeah.
But, you just keep playing. I mean, that's your job.
I still think, though, if Bias is fine and whatever, he's on that team, you and Mikhail now, like Mikhail has a hurt foot. Now they're like, all right, Kevin, take your time. We got Len Bias.
Sure.
Like, and you're not playing 43 minutes a game in May and June and stuff like that. Maybe you play until.
Yeah. You know, I played against Len Bias when he was a sophomore in college, and he was incredible. See, Red used to bring all these.
Like a college all-star thing?
No, yeah. Red used to bring these guys into his camp, all the top players around the country, in to work his camp. And at night we play. I come out there and we play.
Yeah.
I work his camp a little bit and mess around with him. Then at night we play. But he had Brad Daugherty and Lenny. They don't do that anymore. Nobody can do that anymore.
Yeah.
But he got to see all these guys up close. But I do know if somebody else took Len Bias number one, he was taking Brad Daugherty. I think that was Red's really number one guy. He loved Bias. But he couldn't pass up on a skilled big man.
And Daugherty was fantastic.
Fantastic.
And he was another guy that got cut short.
Great with any team, but he would have done well with us.
Because we had the Seattle pick that year from the Henderson trade.
You're right.
And I just remember watching all those guys that year and thinking, meanwhile, it's the best Celtic team of all time playing at that moment, and then we have this pick. And it was like, my God, like, Celtics beat the Rockets in the finals. The draft's like 10 days away, right. And we're adding the second pick in the draft. And it just seemed like, all right, we didn't win like seven straight titles.
I remember the night they traded Henderson. We're in the layup line. They took him out of the layup line. We go back to the hotel. He's sitting in the bar. We all go up there and, hey, sorry, Henny, and all that. He goes, oh, well, I'll get a chance to play all the time. Well, he's playing quite a bit for us.
Yeah.
Then when they had a bad year, we get the second pick in the draft. Now, I remember when they started doing all the the draft, the envelopes and all that. Red sitting there looking up, no emotion. And it got down to them and Cleveland, I think.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there going, well, Red's going to get the number one pick. That's just how much faith you had in the guy.
Yeah.
And I thought for sure, I didn't know who he was going to take because I never asked him, but I really believe he would have took Brad Daugherty.
I actually agree with you because it was just, when you think about Daugherty, Walton, Parrish, and McHale.
They would have took him.
It would have been embarrassing.
I mean, just because, that was in 86, he just knows that Bill might, go out any time, get a little bit older, and bring another big man in there that's very skilled. But Lenny was one heck of a player. And Red might have been thinking, bring Lenny in here, and I want to play Larry so many minutes, too. But
yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, when you think about the 80s and just luck and all the different variables, like, take Worthy off the Lakers from day one. They don't win five titles, I'm pretty sure. And I think that was the guy that would have extended everybody else's career. What else, when you think about what-ifs from the 80s? Like, you had the lost title in 82. 87, the team kind of broke down as it went along. Is there another title?
Well, I really felt that when we won our first championship, I told our team, I said, we got to win at least four or five of these things or we didn't do our job.
Yeah.
Because I always thought that we left them on the table.
Yeah.
And some of us, you know, you hate to blame injuries, but like in 87, there was just so many guys hurt. And I know Lakers had guys probably banged up too. But if that was their best team, I would like to play them healthy.
Right. It would have been interesting because, you know, in 86, they made the mistake. They tried to get bigger to compete with the Celtics, which didn't work. Then in 87, they said, well, we're going to get fast, and we're going to try to run them off the court.
Get meaner.
But you think, like, it, basically that game four of the 87 finals came down to Matt, the rebound gets screwed up out of bounds, which nobody remembers.
Right,
two guys in the rebound, they knock it out of bounds. Magic makes a skyhook, which Mikhail blocks if his foot's not broken. He just missed it.
Well, and we were down, and I hit a three, put us up, I think, one or two. Then they missed a free throw.
Yeah, Kareem.
And they get it out of bounds. And if Kevin's going to get fouled, if he just grabs a rebound.
Right. And then you missed the final three, which I was sitting midcourt. You were, like, here when you shot it, and the ball was, and I had a dead, and I thought it was in.
I did, too.
And you missed, like,
it went all the way down
in
and popped out.
Just missed it.
I let it go.
You thought it was going in.
Yeah, I did. I was surprised it didn't go in, because I got an open, there's 2 seconds on the clock, and I made a move up, and I went, which we've used before with 1 or 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And they lead me into the shot, and a perfect pass. And when I let it go, I just thought, well,
That's it.
Right
in front of the Laker bench, too.
And I got a shot off that I would live with. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, I had got a good shot off and missed. I can live with that. But that thing should have went in.
That probably would have, I think the roof would have collapsed.
Well, you know,
I think that would have been it. That would have been a riot.
That's like in 84. We lose our first game at home. Game two, Henderson steals the ball. Game three, they blow us out. We're going, what the heck?
Yeah.
Game four, we just got to start getting tougher.
Yeah.
And that whole series changed that day. We put a lot of pressure on them. And we always felt that if we played the Lakers, we could always do something to irritate the heck out of them. And if you get them thinking about if they're going to get hit or if somebody's saying something, it takes them off their game because they like to get it out, run, and just keep pushing, get in their flow. You got to take them out of that flow.
Your era, it was so much more physical, and stuff was just settled on the court, and it was fine. And now it's like if somebody stares at somebody too long, it's a tech. It's a double tech. Oh, you touch me. Like, even you had that thing with Danny Granger and Kevin Love the other night. That was, you know, pretty stupid. It's like the refs have to review it for 10 minutes. Do you think this stuff's just dumb?
Well, they need to put a stop to a lot of it because in the 80s when I played, there was a lot of cheap shots. If you go back and watch the Pistons playing against Chicago, I mean, Michael and Scotty were getting pounded. And a lot of it happened after the whistle. Like, mm-hmm. you're going in, and you get fouled, and the guy goes ahead and tries to – that's a free foul. I remember when I first came to the league, there's no layup rule.
Yeah.
But guys were getting hurt, and, you know, it takes a toll on your body. They had to clean it up some, but they've taken it too far, especially with the flagrant fouls and stuff.
You got in a couple scraps back in the day. You weren't afraid to throw the knuckles around.
Didn't hit anybody, but I like to throw them.
Hey, you beat up Alan Bristow.
I don't know if I beat him up.
Well, you got a couple good ones, man. There was the preseason game, which was a classic, which you against Ivan Roney.
Every time.
It was like Maxwell against Moses. Then Red came out of the stands. Like, those were the days.
Why would they have us playing the 76ers in exhibition 3 times?
For money, probably, right?
For fighting. It happened every time. Every time. I heard Charles Barkley a couple of years ago. So when he first came to the league, you know, they're playing these exhibition games and guys were loosey-goosey. And he thought that's how it was. He said, all of a sudden we played the Celtics. Walked in the locker room, I was talking to everybody. I goes, hey, man, calm down. He said, it was a real game.
Yeah.
And sure enough, something happened.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it was.
It's funny. I went to the Clippers-Lakers preseason game this year, and it reminded me a little bit of those Sixers-Celtic games where it was like, it was not a preseason game.
Right.
These guys were like, they wanted to beat each other.
Yeah.
And I've been to 3 of those games so far. There's real animosity. It's kind of fun. Like, I miss those days of, I don't like the stuff with the guys hugging before the games and all that stuff. I wish the old days were back.
You got to take it. You know, this is your job. And a lot of people depend on whether you win or lose. You know, we got this building. We got all these workers. They got to feed their families.
Yeah.
And you go out there and mess around, and you don't put a full effort into it every night. Not only does your team suffer, but everybody suffers from that.
Right.
So if you're winning, everybody's happier.
You left the bad blood on the court for the most part, but not with Lambeer. You never really liked Laimbeer in any social situation.
No.
Yeah.
And it's because he was a dirty player.
Right.
Now, he had to do what he had to do. I understand that. But you take, like, Ricky Mahorn, he'd hit you and all that. But he'd hit you, you know you're going to get hit.
Yeah.
But he didn't try to maim you.
Right.
Bill tried to hurt you.
Right.
And, he was one of them guys, you shoot a jumper, he'd try to slide his foot underneath your ankle so you twist your ankle. And that's why Parrish always went down.
Did he really used to do that?
That's why Parrish always went down. If you watch any of our old games, Parrish was always twisting his ankle against the Pistons. So one time I shot a jumper and Laimbeer did it to me, and I stepped on his foot, but I stepped on a high, I didn't twist my ankle. I don't know, a quarter or two later, he was shooting that jumper. I slid mine on there. That's the last time he ever did it.
Really?
Yeah. But he was, he had to play the way he had to play, and we all understood that. But if you carry it too far, you carry it over the line, you got to protect yourself.
I was at the game when the famous game where you stole the ball, but in the second quarter, and the crowd just had so much hatred for Laimbeer for that game. I've never been in any sort of a sporting event where the crowd hated a player that much. And I still am convinced to this day that the crowd convinced Parrish to punch him in the second quarter.
Oh, no question.
Because you watch the replay, and it was like barely he did anything.
It could have happened two plays before.
You're right. But the crowd wanted it to happen.
You know, they were on him pretty hard, but I never seen the opposing fans going to get on anyone like I seen him get on Ralph Sampson.
That was the other one I was going to mention.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And this poor kid, they might as well just took him home because I think he ended up with 2 points and two rebounds. And I think the game before they had like 24 and 22.
Yeah.
And they took him completely out of the game. And that's one thing about fans. I mean, Boston fans, I mean, I can go in the paper. You know, sometimes they get there, they just expect it. And the crowd ain't into it. I can just go in the paper and tell Bob Ryan, put in it, I'm pissed off at the fans. And the next time you go in there, they're crazy. But you didn't have to that game. I mean, we were in the locker room, and, you know, you could hear fans out there, but in 86, at game six, that locker room sounded like they was in the locker room. And I can remember looking at Bill Walton said, hey, they want blood. And I said, yeah, they don't care whose they get. If we don't win this game, they want our blood. That's how it is here. But that was a wild game, and just the emotions were so high because we had our best team, and we had to win that game.
And the crowd, I think, I was at that game. I was in the tunnel. I think everybody was there like 45 minutes before that game.
Yeah,
people were just ready.
Yeah.
And when Sampson walked out, he walked by us. You could just see he was done.
Yeah.
He was petrified. And he should have been. He was like, really seemed like he was getting killed.
He's picking on Jerry Sitchin. Come
right.
on.
You used to like that, though. You used to like when the crowd got on you.
Yeah. It's funny how it works. I used to get very nervous and sick, a little sick before each game. But once I stepped on the parquet, it was all over with. Now it's time to battle. And when the fans were into it, we wasn't into it, they let us know. And it'd do the same thing if they're screaming real loud to me.
Mm.
You know, they don't like it. You know, they paid their money to come in here. You know, they traveled. I mean, I know people used to go down after work, get something to eat, and go to the game. Not once a week. Every time we played, for every game I was there. So you felt indebted to them to at least go out there and try to do something special that night and win a basketball game.
That was my favorite regular season win from the 86 team, which was my favorite team. But Atlanta, they talk trash. They're
down
up by
there,
20 at halftime.
Yeah, that was in
the crowds yelling and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then the team comes out in the second half, just eye of the tiger. And it's a great game.
That's
it's
the first. Bloodbath. KC Jones got on us three times really hard. And at that halftime talk he gave is one of the best I've ever heard about having pride. You're wearing the jersey.
Mm.
A lot of you guys have been here for a long time, but obviously you don't know what it means to be a Celtic. You know, even the whole thing. And he never screamed or never yelled. And he goes, you know, we got it in us to come back and win this game. But we have to do it. We got to dictate the second half of how we want to play.
Yeah.
And we got out there and we ended up beating them.
And then game five in the playoffs that year against Atlanta, 25-0 run in the third quarter.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
That's the best basketball ever, right?
I mean, it's not like they were turning it over.
Right.
It's just we were in passing lanes. We were up on them. They were taking shots with pressure on them. We got every rebound. And actually, they were trying for three-fourths that quarter. But
you called like four timeouts, I think.
Yeah, that run was one of the greatest runs we ever had in Boston.
I think that was the greatest team ever, but if it needed one thing, what would you have added to it? What type of player? It's like a leaper off the bench or like a shifty point guard or...
Well, we got by with Jerry because he can knock down jumpers. And, man, you had to have that. Because with the double teams, the ball rotation, I thought he was excellent for a team. I don't know. I really don't know if...
He was also an underrated defender. I always thought he did a decent job against Isaiah.
Isaiah hated him. Because he was up on him. You know, every time he throw a ball, he's right there. Yeah. You know, after, you know, 20 minutes he's in there, you get a little tired of him being around.
Yeah.
And he was a tough kid, you know, so...
One thing about that team, it was such a good passing team because you and Walton. And, you know, I think when you have a really good passer, sometimes it's contagious. And you take a guy like Mikhail, who I think if he goes to another team, you know, he's a little bit of a black hole. I'm not sure he ever makes a pass. On those mid-80s Celtics teams, he's actually, like, finding guys and stuff like that. And you can see this a little bit right now with Ricky Rubio and Kevin Love.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times you've seen them.
I watch them all the time.
They have the passing gene. You can see that, right?
Yeah. Well, they've been having success because the other guys are starting to pick it up.
Right.
They'll continue to get better. If they start winning games, they'll be a tough beat because they'll have ball movement. They'll have guys moving without the ball because Ricky will find them. And then Kevin can go inside and out, and he's a willing passer. So it's contagious. There's no question about it. When I got to the Celtics earlier in my career, it took us about a year. Tiny always felt he held on the ball a little bit too long at times, but he's always surveying, see what he did. But we were a pretty good passing team, and that's why we had Chris Ford, guys willing to give up. If you had an 18-foot shot, you give it to somebody who had a 10-foot shot, and that's just the way we played.
And then when Walton showed up, I mean, it was just, for you guys, it just seemed like every game was like you're trying to do some weird thing you've never tried on a basketball court.
But he, you know, he just missed two games that year.
Yeah.
And I can remember when Bill first came in, he had dinner with Robert and said, look, Robert, I'm here to take your job. I'm just here trying to help you win a championship. So he broke the ice. So Robert, when we were right into practice, it was like we never missed a beat. And we had a good second unit to push us. And, you know, we hardly took a day off. I mean, we practice every day. KC used to do what he did with us in practice. He'd leave, then we'd scrimmage.
Yeah.
You know, because they wanted to play. Bill and Jerry and them guys wanted to scrimmage because I was playing 43 minutes. Scotty, what, or 40, 38. Scotty wasn't getting a lot of time, but he knew the competition was there. For him to get better, we had to practice.
Yeah. Did it make you sad that starting kind of with when Jordan's took over the league, it became a league of clear out for this guy, clear out for that guy, and that passing went away for the most part?
Well, if you remember, they used to isolate on one side and four guys go on the other side.
With you, yeah.
But I thought that was bad basketball. A lot of teams were using it. But... you know, when Michael came in, it was different because he was a scorer. He had a scoring mentality. And as he got better, they started getting better players around him. But, you know, it never really, to me, has been the same. Hopefully Rubio can bring some of that back because he's a willing passer. He's one of the best passers I've ever seen. I mean, if you watch him, he surveys everything, and he's got that knack to get it to people within a shooting motion. Instead of reaching down, grabbing it off the floor or over here, he gets it to him in a shooting motion. So I'd say if they continue to work and do the right things and win some games, they're going to be a tough out.
I love that you're watching them. I figured you might be watching them.
Yeah, I watched, you know, I seen Ricky play when he was 16.
Yeah.
And I thought he was a ball boy in the layup line. And at the end of the game, well, not at the end of the game, about 8-10 minutes ago, they put him in the game. He looked so young. And the scout that was with me, I go, man, can this kid play? They keep talking about how good he is. He goes, if he can bring the ball up the court against this guy that's guarding, the guy was 31. He said, he'll be fine. Not only did he bring it up and make plays, he took it. He said, but he'll have problems on the defense. Well, he stole the ball twice from the guy bringing it up. He goes, this kid's going to be good.
Mm.
He said, you don't take the ball from them. I forget who the kid was.
Why don't you think more guys play like that? I mean, I'm sure there's ego standpoint of it's easier to score and you get more money.
Yeah, you know, the AAU, you know, I'm a firm believer it all starts back there.
Yeah.
You know, the colleges are in there. It's about how many did you get? What kind of dunk did you have? If you look at our game, the mid-range game is almost gone.
Mm.
Just like, you know, even Charles and them, they're always talking about dunking, you know? I mean, Charles was a dunker, but he wasn't. He's more of a passer, you know, some power player. But everybody gets caught up in these dunks. I mean, if somebody dunked on you and you go down and hit a three, who's ahead? You know, I never did get that.
Right.
But I think it'll come back, but we're really missing the overall game. We're just seeing great athletes out there running and jumping.
At the same time, it's been the best era, I think, ever for point guards. I mean, you look around the league and it's like there's seven or eight elite guys. You have the young guys like Rubio and John Wall and people like that. And even like somebody like Darren Collison, who, you know, maybe in a season like this is in the middle of that pack.
Right.
But 8 years ago would have been one of the best seven or eight guys in the league.
Right. Then you look at LeBron. He can play point.
True.
You know, I mean, he can start an offense and he can get him in the flow. You know, just so many guys. Well, from here on, I hear there's no point guards in this draft.
Yeah.
You know, then next year they might not be. So if you got one, you better keep him.
Right. What do you think about the attention that LeBron's received the last couple of years and the scrutiny and people picking apart his game?
I think he should sit back and enjoy him.
Yeah?
Because I think he's one of the greatest to ever play our game. You know, we all make mistakes. You know, I've did a lot of things I sort of regret. Whether he regrets it or not, I don't know. But he made some, you know, a couple of decisions. The decision was a bad decision.
Yeah.
But as far as playing basketball, you've got to enjoy this guy. If you're a basketball fan, you've got to sit back and go, wow, how did he do that? Or I always say, boy, I wish I had his speed.
Yeah.
You know? But some of the stuff that kid does out there, he's by far, you know, Kobe was always my favorite since I got out.
I don't like that, by the way.
But LeBron James is by far our best player in this league. I don't think there's really anyone next to him. I think he's there, then you go down the list.
Which, if you could have picked any current player right now to play with for an entire season, who would you have picked? Or who would you pick? Just from a fun teammate, make the team better, just all those things in play.
Well, probably Kobe, because
really?
The fact that he's, well, of course he wouldn't have been shooting as much as he does now.
Yeah, but, you would have had to talk with him.
His desire to win, his dedication in the offseason to get better, and he's just tough. He's just a tough cat. But if you want to have fun like I did with Bill Walton, you play with LeBron.
Really?
It would have been probably more fun to play with LeBron. But if you want to win and win and win, it's Kobe. Not that LeBron's not a winner. It's just that his mindset to go in every practice, every game to get better.
I wrote a 700-page book about basketball. And it was really hard to figure out how to measure different guys, you know, measure the eras. Like, how do you measure somebody from your era versus LeBron James, people like that? Because the game's faster now. I mean, it's... people didn't play defense on every play like they do now.
You know, it's funny, and it's hard. It's very hard to compare, but, you know, you never know. Like, I never know how good LeBron is. I remember when I came in to the league, you know, I played a small town. I did very well, and everybody always said, you didn't play against anybody. I went to Indiana State. Same thing. So when I came in the league, there was a lot of doubters.
Yeah.
And, you know, with my mentality, I thought, well, I'll go in there and you know, I'll just do my best to get better. So I go out there, and we're at Marshfield, and had the Cowans and Tiny, and ML Carr was new on our team, had Roby. All these guys came down there to see how good I was. And I just sort of filled my way around. And after 3 days, I go, wonder when these guys are going to start playing hard, you know?
Mm.
So... ML, we went out to eat one night. ML Carr told me, he goes, man, you're going to be really good in this league. And I said, really? And I said, yeah, but you guys ain't playing. He goes, oh, yeah, we're playing. He said, they're talking about it. They think you're going to be pretty good. So we got an exhibition season. Everybody, oh, well, exhibition. And I played pretty well. Well, when the game started, I'm always waiting for these guys to shut me down, deny me the ball. What I found out was all you got to do is shoot a little bit higher.
Yeah.
Put yourself in a position where you can come off a pick a little quicker. It don't have to be 100 mile an hour all the time, but it's got to be a thinking man's game. You got to think. You got to see what you know your plays. You know how they react. You watch the films. You know if they go under a screen or over a screen. You know if you can fade off a pick or you come down and you go straight up, then pop out. So I always tried to put myself in a position where I could succeed with basketball. So if you watch me, very seldom did I catch a ball at 3-point line. I'd break out and try to get it 16, 17 foot.
Mm.
Because if I was going to run a pick and roll with Robert Parrish, and I knew they was going to step out, he could slip that pick, and all he had to do is take two steps, he's going to dunk it. So you had to think the game out. And it's the same as now. I mean, you don't see a head fake much anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys want to jump over the rim and all that. Get them in there, set them up, and drop it off. So if you got to think a man's game, I don't think it would be that much tougher than it was back then, but I sure would like to compete against Kobe and LeBron and them guys, because that's what it's all about, playing against the best.
In your decade, the game was changing as the decade was going along. Like, if you look at the guys that you were going against every night initially, Kelly Trepuka, people like that, the kind of the 6 foot six small forward,
yeah,
that you always kind of had advantage. And then by the end of that decade, all of a sudden now Rodman's in there,
yeah,
and you know, now you have these 6'8" athletes that, yeah, just, it was, you had to work a little harder.
I always say the taller they are, the easier you can come off a pick. Now, they might be able to get up on you to deny your ball, which Rodman did a lot. Cooper get up into me, my shot's probably going to be down that game, but you had to be strong enough to just be physical with them. You know, you play physical basketball. I used to take Cooper in the post a lot, you know, where I run Rodman off of screens. Kelly Trepuka, you know, you run him off double screens, or you try to get, you come off screen, try to get in the lane because you can shoot over him. So just according to who's guarding you. It always dictated, it always went, whatever the defense gave me, I try to take advantage of that.
Wait, are you amazed by how old people can play now? Like Steve Nash, 39, like still running around, scampering around. Kobe's
why?
16. Kobe's 16 seasons. He's still averaging 30 a game. Like,
I mean, it's wild. I mean, I don't get it. But
I mean, a lot of it's like diet and conditioning, all that stuff.
Yeah, it's different, and a lot of core work. We didn't have that. Mine was running on the roads, playing on asphalt in the summer, and you know, that couldn't have been good for you. But you know it. Basketball's basketball, and if your body holds up, you know, you can probably play longer. I mean, if I didn't have all the back and ankle issues, you know, I could have strung it out a little bit, and we could have still been successful. But when it breaks down, you know, when you have surgery on you, you're never the same. And I always understood that.
Oh, that's not a good sign for Peyton Manning, then.
Well, I don't know what he's got wrong with him, but
pretty
I always
serious.
Say, yeah, I always say that once they put that knife in you, you're never the same.
All right, last question. Give us a prediction for the Pacers this year. You feeling good?
Well, I said before the year with my owner, because I watch these guys all the time, and it all depends on what they do in the summer, how much better they get. Roy's improved every year. Last year, he sort of plateaued a little bit, but this year he's taking another level. It all depended on Paul George. Darren Collison had to have a better year. We pick up George Hill and David West. We're already better with them, too. I told him we win between 34 and 38 games, and hopefully we'll win more, but that's my prediction.
Well, and you have a lot of cap space. You can maybe potentially add one piece.
Right. And, you know, we're a franchise where we don't spend $80, $90, $100 million. You know, we got to stay around. We're at $50 million, $51 million now, and that's with Posey on, but he's still part of the party.
Right, and the
but we got to stay between, I think, around $65 million for a while. Now, we got to develop our own players. We got to draft well. So it's not like some of these teams can go out and get some players and they don't work out. If we get a player that don't work, he's probably going to play. So that's the difference being a small market and a major market. But it's been fun because when we go in and play Chicago and we beat them, I feel good about that because I know my team's coming. They're getting an air about them where, you know, I like. Mm. They're starting to do things like I can remember. Oh, I remember when we used to do that. Like the other night, Danny got a little chippy.
Yeah.
Danny's a tough, tough kid, and he's not a dirty player or anything like that. But if you rattle his feathers, he's going to take up for himself. And I like that. That's what I like in a basketball player. Play hard, you play aggressive, but you don't take any stuff off anybody.
And you must feel like it's wide open this year, right? Like in the strike season.
It is, but you know, you got to look at in the East. There's some good teams. I mean,
yeah.
Orlando's got a few problems right now. Atlanta's always got a solid team. But you got Chicago and you got Miami. They're good. And for us to beat them, we're going to have to play our best. And, you know, and if they have injuries, you know, you never know what's going to happen. But I like my team. I like my players. This is really the first year. I've always liked a lot of my players. You know, sometimes you have little problems with certain ones.
Yeah.
But I actually enjoy going down there in the locker room now. I'm not in there a lot.
Yeah.
I don't get real close to my players because, you know, you have to trade them or do
right.
I really enjoy them. They're good kids. And they work. These kids work. And they want to get better. So that's been not a pleasant surprise, but a great feeling to me to be a part of this.
So if you do add one person, it would have to be somebody that fit in with what you've built with
right,
these guys.
Right. You can't bring certain guys. And
can't bring a knucklehead in.
Exactly.
Larry Bird, good luck. Thanks for your time. Appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
So I get to sign off.
Whoa. Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.